some people looked at me when I told them breast cancer, and a lot of people were accepting, and a lot of people just said, well, how did you get that? I mean, how is that possible? Or men don't get breast cancer. And it's an education thing.
Kia ora and welcome to The C Word, Kiwis Talk About Cancer. I'm your host, Helen King, and this is the podcast for cancery people. Please subscribe on Spotify or iTunes so you don't miss out when each episode goes live, and come say hi on Facebook. I love hearing from you, and we've had some pretty awesome conversations recently, so come join us. On today's show, we are talking about a type of cancer that is rarely spoken about. Male breast cancer accounts for about 1% of occurrences of the disease, and in New Zealand that equates to about 25 men per year being diagnosed with it. Ron Rappaport and Greg Sargent are members of the Male Breast Cancer Coalition. Ron lives in Florida and Greg in Orewa, north of Auckland. We started our conversation discussing how they discovered their cancer.
It was late in the fall of 2018. We had taken a trip to Spain, and I had taken my shirt off to go swimming or whatever. And I noticed that my left nipple was kind of a tiny bit puckered in. And before that time period, I had a nasty fall because I had had the flu and I was dehydrated, and I fell down at home and actually passed out. They had to take me to the hospital. I was completely dehydrated. And so I hit that chest area. And also right around before we went to Spain, I had remembered hitting my chest with a car door. So I thought, you know, it's probably healing from that. And so fast forward to right around Christmas time, 2018, I looked at it. I was starting to look at it every day, and it wasn't getting any better. And as a matter of fact, it was getting a little bit more pronounced. So I said to my wife, hey, take a look at this. And she looked at it, and the first thing out of her mouth was, you're going to get a mammogram. And so I looked, you know, I had looked up the symptoms of male breast cancer. And one of them, of course, is the puckering of the breast area and the inverted nipple and the wrinkling, and, you know, the chest could be a little bit bigger and all that. But I had read the chances of a man getting breast cancer, the lifetime risk is 1 in 1,000. So you figure to yourself, you know, 1 in 1,000 is probably scar tissue. You know, I'm thinking, well, it's probably scar tissue. So I went to the doctor. My GP was out for Christmas. I went to another doctor that kind of has one of those emergency clinics. I know him real well. He's a really good doctor. And I took my shirt off, and he says, what are you here for? And I said, I'm here. I want you to look at my chest. And he goes, yeah, okay. Well, what about it? And I said, well, don't you think this is a little funny? And he goes, well, I don't know. You know, he says, I'll tell you what, I'll order you a mammogram. And my wife said, I'll tell you what, I want you to go down to the big medical facility. I live in Jacksonville, Florida. We have a big medical facility here, and they have a radiologist on staff who can read it and everything. So we made an appointment. We went down to the big institution. I walked in there, and that was my first experience of what we call being a blue dot in a sea of pink. It's all women. Everything's pink. The forms are, you know, when was your last menstrual period? How many pregnancies have you had? You know, none of it relating to a man. And so anyway, they called my name, my last name. I got up and I went to give them to see the nurse, and she goes, "No, I need your wife." And I said, I showed her my arm band, and I said, "No, I'm the patient." And she goes, "Oh, okay, we'll get you a room." Anyway, they got me a room, and they did. And that's another thing. When I walked in the room, the technician who was doing the mammogram said to me, "By chance, are you Ashkenazi Jewish?" Which is like middle, you know, your background's middle Europe Jewish. I said, "Yeah, how did you know?" And she goes, "No, I was just asking because, you know, your chances of having breast cancer are very are higher." And I thought to myself, "Oh, well, that's great." So anyway, they did the mammogram, and she said, "Well, look, stay here." And they came back in the room and they said, "Your right breast is fine. Your left breast, we're not too sure about." She said, "We're going to need to do a sonogram." So they took me in the next room. My wife came in and she was pretty upset at that moment. Anyway, they did the sonogram and they said, "The radiologist will be in here in a minute and he'll talk to you." And radiologist never showed up. The nurse came back. She said, "The radiologist isn't sure. It could be scar tissue. We want to do a core needle biopsy. Can you come back in a day or two and do it?" So I came back and they did the core needle biopsy. They told me it'd be a week to get my results. And my doctor said, "Hey, let's get ahead of this. Let's call a breast surgeon, you know, make an appointment with so-and-so. And my GP called me up. He said he had the preliminary report. And a few days later, he said it was breast cancer. So that was how I was introduced to it.
Because I know from my experience, it's just a shock. Because I guess, you know, being female, yes, breast cancer is something you think about. But at 37 and no family history, no genetic mutations or anything, it was just like a bomb went off.
When I got diagnosed, actually he woke me up early in the morning from my sleep to tell me. It was like, and in the back of your mind, you know, it's like there's a chance, there's a good chance it could be breast cancer. It was like getting hit over the head with a sledgehammer. I mean, I was just like, oh, wow. And the first thing that came to my mind was I'm a bald-headed guy, emaciated, chemo, radiation. I don't know what stage this thing is. You know, it's like facing, death, I guess.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's hard not to have a cancer diagnosis and immediately jump to planning your funeral. It's really hard. Yeah. Greg, well, I know that you have a similar story where, you started having some changes. What was your experience with the diagnosis process?
Right. Okay. Well, I had, a bit like Ron, I had a sore nipple, went to the doctors, and I reckon that on GP terms, checking for male breast cancer is very low on the GP checklist for men. Now, I was going to Europe for 3 months, attending weddings and seeing family, and he said, "And I, a bit like Ron, I said, well, I think I had this, I banged it on a car door." So I went down to hematoma, bruising. I went off to Europe and it started to fungate. So it started to ooze. The nipples started to fungate. So I went to various pharmacists over there who just told me to dress it, which I did. I came back, went back to the doctor. He took one look at it and said, "You need to go for a scan and a biopsy." This was in Tauranga. So they sent me down to the clinic. Didn't quite have the same experience as Ron that I had to go into. I was sort of quite well looked after down there. So I had the scan and the biopsy. The biopsy came through virtually within 48 hours, confirmed stage 3 breast cancer, 4-centimetre tumour. Go and see Peter Chin, the surgeon in Tauranga Hospital, where I found I was the first patient in 2016 in Waikato area to, or in Bay of Plenty, to have this. So that's a very succinct way of saying that was how I got... It was the GP, yeah. I think, to me, and I've said this in other interviews and stuff, is that for the want of a scan right at the beginning, it may not have been quite so bad as it ended up. Mm-hmm. And that's because I think that it's fairly low down on the GP checklist. You know, they look at it and think, well, no, this has got to be something else, a bruising or whatever.
Yes.
So Peter Chin, who's an excellent surgeon down in Tauranga Hospital, and it just happened. You just get pushed into the process,
mm-hmm.
and you don't have a lot of time to think about it. It was between the biopsy and the surgery was 2 weeks, so they moved pretty quick. So I was very thankful for that. But being the only man around, you do get treated a bit like a sort of a weird celebrity. You know, it's 15 minutes worth of fame you don't want.
Exactly.
You know, you're sort of an oddity in the place, you know.
Yeah. So
that was my diagnosis to surgery. That was it, really.
I was going to say, Helen, you know, this is one of the big problems, is that the doctors... We're low on the totem pole list as far as them checking us, our breasts. They don't even do it. And our founder of the Male Breast Cancer Coalition, his name is Brett Miller. He was 17 years old when he found his lump. And he went to the doctor and told him about it. And they sloughed him off. They said it was a cyst. It was a calcium buildup. It was puberty. He came back several times after that, the same thing. And 7 years later, his nipple was starting to discharge. And he thought, oh, they told me it was calcium buildup, so maybe the calcium's discharging. Well, he went to the doctor, and immediately they diagnosed him with male breast cancer. So that's 7 years that he was misdiagnosed. And I'm sure it happens to a lot of other men as well.
In some of the Tauranga Breast Foundation, we had a woeful collection of three of us who met for morning tea one day, and all three of us had all got initially diagnosed with hematomas before it got worse and they ended up with breast cancer.
And it's three men?
Three men, yeah. Three of us, yeah. We all met for morning tea and we shared our story, and all three of us had got initially diagnosed with hematomas.
Yeah, yeah.
Before it then complicated and got worse, back to wrong point, my mind fungated, other people's do something else, before it actually came on the radar. So it's a very worrying sort of event in terms of, you know, advocacy about making men aware of what this is. I think that's, and making doctors aware of what this is. And men asking the question of their GPs and their primary health care provider, actually asking those questions and making them aware, that says, hey, look, you might think it's a bruise. Can you tell me it's not male breast cancer? You know, asking the questions, but most men don't know the questions to ask.
I think I read in some of the information that Ron sent, and I thought it was a really good point, that if you have breasts, you can get breast cancer. Because I was misdiagnosed first too, because I was too young. And I hear this story over and over and over again, whether they think, oh, you're too young, or you're a male, so that it can't possibly be this thing. And I think because we're conditioned not to question doctors, you think, okay, well, they know what they're talking about. And we often sort of ignore that little nagging voice saying, no, this isn't right. There's something not quite right here.
Yeah.
And it's really frustrating, because we know that when we catch our symptoms early, then sometimes the treatment isn't as awful, or you've caught it earlier, you know. And I hear that frustration, because I hear it so often of people saying, I was brushed off by the doctor.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, at the Male Breast Cancer Coalition, we're out there advocating, because men just don't like going to doctors, and they slough a lot of this off. And just yesterday, we have a brother-to-brother program, and I talked to one of the newer brothers in the group, and he sloughed it off. He had a lump in his behind his nipple. And he let it grow. He didn't do anything about it, and it got to be the size of half of a baseball. And he went into the doctor, and he's stage four.
Wow.
And this is another big problem. You know, we have to get out there. We have to let men know that this can happen to you. You need to check your breasts. And part of the problem is, you know, the big groups, you know, are all pink.
Yeah.
And they're just not doing what they should. They should be. We need to degender the disease.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, I know that the pink drives me nuts too, because I feel that the marketing for breast cancer is towards a very particular person, or there are that not everyone fits into, and I think we do a disservice to each other if we're not saying, actually, it even comes down to, really, if you have cells that can divide, you can get cancer.
Right.
So, you know, with breast cancer,
right,
it's as we're saying. But there is a point that I came across that I thought was a very interesting one, about changing it to chest cancer, because perhaps calling something, saying that, you know, your breast cancer, is another deterrent for men to seek treatment. What do you guys think about that sort of idea?
Well, I can start that off. We had we have a monthly meeting, and we had a very well-known music mogul who was on with us, and very well-known with a very large platform. And culturally, in the black and the brown community, the Latino community, men don't really want, you know, breast cancer, breast, even the word, you know, it just isn't a good term for them. And it prevents them from coming out, so to speak. So anyway, we had a difference of opinion. We believe that you're diagnosed with breast cancer. That's what you have. You have breast tissue. And he was trying to tell us that, from a marketing standpoint, not really from an anatomical or medical standpoint, that he can reach people better using that term. And I think that term is very confusing. What I would say is, if you want to use that term to start a conversation, I think that's fine. But at the end of the conversation, I believe you should just say, hey, look, it's breast cancer. That's what you're diagnosed with. And, you know, we're the coalition, we're only 6 years old, and we're out there trying to get more funding for research for men and everything. And to use a term, chest cancer, is just confusing. And, you know, what is chest cancer? It could be lung cancer, thoracic cancer. You know, there is such a thing as chest cancer, but it's not breast cancer. So anyway, that's my opinion on that.
What about you, Greg? Have you come up against then? Yeah.
I agree with a lot of what Ron said. I mean, I'll tell you a little funny story. I was in a clinic in Tauranga, and waiting to go in to have some chemo, and the guy said, what are you here for? And I said, oh, I've got breast cancer. And the guy said, so where do you get that then? So where are you? I mean, that was the ignorance of the person. He didn't even believe that, you know, that you got breast cancer. And you know, when I first got diagnosed, I went through this, oh, it's a women's disease. And then somebody explained to me, which I wasn't aware of, and it was very interesting, that we have milk ducts in our breasts, and that, you know, we have the same construct. We don't produce milk, but we have a lot of the same construct, and we're liable to get breast cancer. And I take Ron's point is that I think it would get very confusing if we started to move away from breast cancer. I get a lot of people say, why do you call it male breast cancer? We all have breast cancer. But that's it. But that guy in that clinic was just classic of, well, where do you get that then? I mean, it's like, well, you have to be fairly explicit. And without that, I think you start to lose the focus. I mean, you know, we have the Mauve week with farmers doing the prostate cancer and all that sort of stuff, you know, and I just think we have to be precise.
It is a tough one, I think, in terms of how do you get men to see a doctor in the first place? Because I know with things like prostate cancer, it can be a challenge to get men to go to the doctor and be checked. And I know that the Prostate Foundation do an amazing job of, you know, advocating for those sorts of things. But I guess it's the same with breast cancer, is how do we encourage men to, you know, take care of their health, to go and get things investigated, to push past any embarrassment and that sort of thing?
Well, you know, the whole thing about calling it chest cancer, I called it chest cancer when I was first diagnosed, because there's a stigma to this. And you go, well, you know what, I'll call it chest cancer. You know, and then after a while, you have to be honest with yourself. It's not chest cancer. It's breast cancer. And I mean, you know, some people looked at me when I told them breast cancer, and a lot of people were accepting, and a lot of people just said, well, how did you get that? I mean, how is that possible? Or men don't get breast cancer. And it's an education thing. You know, so, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. I want to go back a bit and talk about treatment, because I think this is always something that people, I don't know, enjoy hearing about, that what we all go through. And I know you've both had slightly different treatment paths. So, Ron, you did have a left mastectomy, but you didn't go on to need radiation or chemo. Is that right?
Yeah. My breast surgeon, when she looked at the imaging, she said, Ron, it looks wimpy. and I said, wimpy's good, right? And she said, yeah, wimpy's good. And she says, I don't know. She says, you might have stage two. You might have stage one. You can, she gave me a choice of a lumpectomy. Which didn't make any sense, because I would need radiation with that.
Yeah.
And it was only, I think, 40% or 60% effective. Anyway, she said, and of course, you can have the total mastectomy, and that's the way to go. And at that point, she recommended genetic testing to make sure I didn't have the BRCA1 or 2 gene mutation. So I did the BRCA test, and I was negative. And so my mindset at that point was just to do the left breast, and I left the right one alone. I just wasn't in the mindset to do two of them. And after the mastectomy, they did a MammaPrint and a Oncotype DX test. Which they test the tumor to see about recurrence.
Oh, yes.
And the Oncotype came back 7, and the MammaPrint was ultra low. So there was no need. They concluded there was no need for radiation or chemotherapy. So I was very, very lucky. And I said to my wife, if I get through this, I'm going to advocate for the Male Breast Cancer Coalition. But I just want to tell you a little story. We were talking about the stigma. Before I had my surgery on February 8th of 2019, I had to have some dental, a dental crown put in before my surgery because they didn't want me doing it afterward. And I called my dentist and I said, hey, can you expedite it, the crown, because I'm having my surgery on February 8th. And, you know, they don't want me to do any dental procedures after that. So anyway, I said, I'm having cancer surgery. And they said, we'll do our best. They called me up on the 7th. They said, we have your crown. Come on in. I came in. The technician, the lady technician, sat me down before the dentist came in. She said, oh, I understand you're having cancer surgery tomorrow. I said, yeah. What kind of cancer surgery? I said, breast cancer. She started laughing.
Oh, God.
Uncontrollably.
Yeah.
And she said, oh, my God, what a great joke that is. No, really. And I said, no, I'm not joking. Well, at that moment, a light bulb went off in my head. And I said, you know what? Men shouldn't have to go through this. And that's when my embarrassment turned to empowerment. And that painful moment turned to purpose. So that's how I got involved in advocacy work.
Gosh, that's so awful, because I think also with breast cancer, people, I've heard it being called the friendly cancer. Oh, that's the good one to get. And it's, I just sort of think, you know, through 18 months of treatment, I had a full mastectomy, most of my lymph nodes removed. You know, I've got ongoing pain. You know, it's just so, to me, I sort of think there's nothing friendly about this cancer. It is, right. It is brutal.
Well, I turned that awful moment into a good moment.
Yeah.
So it was for, you know, it worked out well.
Yeah. And Greg, you went through the whole sort of...
I went through the whole shebang.
Yeah, they threw the book at you.
I had the surgery.
Yeah.
But it's quite interesting because... they got to know me as the Mr. Percentage Man because I kept saying, because they laid out the treatment plan, which was surgery, chemo, yes. radiology, and then tamoxifen,
yes.
Right? But at each stage, I was saying, so what's, if I go through this, what's the percentage chance of it returning? And they got quite used to me
questioning
why I was going to have this next type of treatment.
Yes.
And they said, well, you know, 50% surgery will give you 50% chance of not coming back. If you have the chemo, it goes up to 60. Radiotherapy goes up to 70. Tamoxifen brings it up higher. So I was actually arguing through a very logical way. That's how I dealt with it,
mm-hmm.
going through that. But, yeah, I went through after surgery, had a bit of a break, and then they put me through 16 rounds of chemo. Four of the real nasty ones first.
Yeah.
That really... really do you in. I did miss one, and they said, oh, you wouldn't have to make it up. But my oncologist was quite masochistic and said, no, you're going to have to do it. So I had all 16. But what I did do, which was quite useful, I had some very large vitamin C infusions.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I had never said to my oncologist I thought vitamin C was going to cure cancer. Although when I was having these vitamin C infusions, there was a lot of people taking vitamin C, mistletoe oil, and turmeric in high doses, which was helping them.
Mm-hmm.
I had the vitamin C up to 85 grams in a two-hour sitting to help my immune system. So in between the three-weekly one, that was okay, because midweek I could go off and have my vitamin C and it didn't affect it. And then I went on the weekly chemo. That was a bit more difficult, but we managed to get that in. So that helped deal with the chemo. And I managed to keep going. I was going to the gym, kept exercising, doing everything I could to keep myself fit. I didn't get lymphedema. I mean, I did all my physio. I was going to the gym, working on my shoulder and everything. I had 13 lymph nodes removed. One had cancer in it. Which was lucky, it was just the one at the top, so it hadn't spread. So after chemo, you have another little rest, and then off you go to radiotherapy. That was probably the most painful, because I had quite, I don't know, did you have radiotherapy, Helen?
Yeah.
Yeah. The burns got me.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, going in, I had to have dressing on the burns. They were quite nasty.
Yes.
But... My story there was that my mother had died of cancer of the inner ear many years ago, but I believe to this day it was the radiotherapy on her head that killed her. So I was quite particular to see how accurately they targeted the radiotherapy on the cancer area. So got through the radio. The other funny story was when I'd had the surgery, of course, I had two chest drains for a while. And I had them in a bag.
Yes.
And I was in Bayfair. And I just really wished the people in Kmart would have said, "What have you got in your bag?" To see the blood and the gut coming out of that. But I was still going in there.
I think what you've both touched on is something that I felt quite as passionate about. And I think for me, that's why I started this podcast, was that for me, it was my way of being able to talk to people and, you know, help people share their stories because, you know, having others that understand your experience, you know, for me, it's other young women, because the issues that you face as a younger person, especially younger women, is quite different from maybe if you're a little bit older. And I imagine for men, it's a little bit different. So it's so important that we have these advocacy groups, not only to get that information out, but to provide those spaces where you guys can talk about it. Because there was one thing I noticed in both of your stories is that you've both had or are still on tamoxifen. And I know for women, that is an awful, awful experience. Yeah. So I imagine for men, it's also awful, and having people to talk about that.
I have to take an antidepressant because when I first started, I blubbed all over the place, and it was like, you know, I was so emotional about everything, you know. So they balanced it out with another drug, which was fine. And I'm, apart from some foggy periods and days when I don't really have the energy, I'm not too bad now because they've got the balance right. But without that balancing drug, I couldn't continue on that.
How about you, Ron? What was your experience with the tamoxifen?
My experience with tamoxifen, I'm on it. I'm on it for 10 years, and I'm going into my. I just completed about a year of it.
Yeah.
At first, I was getting the hot flashes, just like the women. There's a sexual dysfunction side of this thing. That, you know, experienced some of that. You know, what can I say? Joint pain, that type of thing. But what I'm doing right now is actually a couple weeks ago, I just decided to split the dose. So I'm taking 10 milligrams in the morning and I'm taking 10 at night, and it seems to be helping more. Allaying the side effects. But I did want to say something that Greg just touched upon. He said, well, there's not any men to talk to. The Male Breast Cancer Coalition is global. We're in the UK, we're in Japan, we're in Ireland, we're Canada, Australia, we're all over the world, and we have a support group. And we have a one-on-one brother-to-brother program. We have a caregivers group. We have people who are grieving group. So if you know anybody come across any men who have male breast cancer, please turn them on to the Male Breast Cancer Coalition. We have an excellent website, malebreastcancercoalition.org.
Yeah, I'll put that up on the Facebook page and in the show notes for today. I think it's so important that we can connect in with groups that can help us through this. And I think I don't know about what for you guys, because I know for me, the treatment was hard. Chemo just floored me. I was very, very ill, and the whole treatment for me lasted 18 months. But it was actually the after treatment that I have found hardest, the picking life back up and getting back on. Because I feel like there's often this expectation of, oh, you're back to normal now, where I've often said to people, there's actually, you can't go back to your life of pre-cancer. That doesn't exist anymore. There's only really after cancer, and trying to figure out how do you pick life back up, how do you kind of process what's happened. Has that been the same for you?
I think there's collateral damage. I think, you know, what I call collateral damage. And a lot of the guys worry about recurrence. You know, that's a big thing. And, you know, some men go through it and they want to forget about it. But I don't really see how you can do that.
No.
No. You see the scar in the mirror every morning. I would change a little bit because whether I was fortunate through that, but I kept on doing my scouts because I'm involved in the scouts in New Zealand and I was zone leader in Western Bay of Plenty, and I carried on doing that during my treatment. I was doing community patrol. I was still doing that during my treatment. I still do both of those things post-treatment. Nobody thought I would ever play tennis again with my shoulder, but I spent so many hours in the gym rebuilding the muscle around where the scar is that I now play tennis twice a week to a reasonable standard with the Vets Club in Arewa. I think it's how much you break what you're doing, and it depends on what you have to restart. And I was maybe different to a lot of people, but I didn't break too much. I tried to keep going, and that was the mental thing, because I could deal with the physical pain, aggravation, soreness, you know, give me surgery and burns. That was actually relatively easy, but to keep the mental positiveness going was the hardest thing. But I found that since I've had all that treatment, I'm actually fitter. I still go to the gym two times a week, play tennis, go walking. I'm actually fitter now after than I was before. And that's just me, but that's how I feel. And coming back, I just take every day at a time, get on with my life, and try and help other men understand that this is not the big disaster that they think about. You know, because I think a lot of the cure is up in your head. The physical stuff most of us can take, and I think that is part of the advocacy. Is like, this is not the end of the world.
I agree with Greg. You have to have that mental fitness. I work out every day. I go swimming. I did play tennis. I go walking 4 or 5 miles a day. Like he said, the pain from the mastectomy and all that stuff, that's minor. It's what's up in your head. And we tell even the people that the people with stage four, they've got to keep that mental acuity going. They've got to press on. Definitely.
I guess for me, my experience was very, like, my whole life changed. It just turned everything on its head. And, you know, the treatment I had was really intensive. And, you know, there were months there where I could walk to the letterbox and back. And that was it. And that was going for someone who was very active beforehand to not be, you know, to really not being able to do those things. And then I guess, you know, being younger, you know, I don't know if I'll be able to have children. So what I've noticed with, especially with people who are younger, there is a sense of grief because there is a lot that sort of changes. And that can be, processing that can be really, really difficult. But on the flip side of that, I sort of feel that the biggest gift cancer has given me is I just no longer put up with bullshit. because I just sort of, but you know what I mean? Yeah. It's that thing of, it's this huge thing that makes you realize, oh, you know, things are very finite. So what do I want to, how do I want my life to look? What do I want to fill it up with? And I think that can be quite an amazing sort of gift that, you know, if we want to think about the positives of cancer, it does make you really hone in on what is important.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think you're right, Helen, Chris. I mean, and it's also about taking on new challenges. I mean, I've just taken on a new challenge. I've just applied to be a Justice of the Peace here.
Oh, awesome.
It will take a lot of commitment and training. So I think it's also, as you come out of this, it's actually looking for new challenges. So you don't get stuck in this ditch of despair around what I've been through and what's happened. You just got to keep moving forward. And I've seen too many. I had one guy in Tauranga who I was counselling a little bit early on because the foundation, and he was really in a bad space. And he just couldn't get beyond the women's disease and the masculinity issue and whatever. And I still worry. I still sometimes ask some questions about him, but he's got sort of gone off the radar a bit. And it worries me because I could see that he wasn't coming out of it, and he was just sinking back into this real dark place where he didn't really want to be. And I think there's been, and that's why the advocacy is important, to give people that hope, that light, that opportunity to say, I don't have to sink into that. I can actually move forward and do my best with what I've got.
Yeah, it's that ability to kind of hold both, isn't it? To say, you know, I can feel really sad about it, which is fine, but to not get stuck in it. Because I often say to people, you know, cancer takes so much from us. Don't let it take even more by kind of holding you in that, in that sort of cancer state of mind. Well, you guys are doing amazing work. I've been looking your stuff up and seeing what you do. So it's a pretty amazing thing that you're offering me and across the world, which is really important. So, yeah, thank you so much. I've really enjoyed talking
to you. Helen,
thank you for having us.
It's really good. Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks so much for joining me. Don't forget Podfest is happening. So we've just wrapped up the amazing pre-week and I attended a few of the sessions and they've been really cool. It is an amazing online event with hundreds of speakers, including me. It is not too late to get your ticket. You can use my promo code, which is CWordPodFest. And I am going to be talking in the States. It will be the 1st of March, but here in the Southern Hemisphere, it is the 2nd of March at 4 p.m. So I'd love to see you. Come join me, come support me, and I will be talking about how I created the C Word, all the lessons I've learned. I would really love to hear from you guys about what you thought of today's episode, because we had a great conversation on Facebook about this, because I could not stop thinking about this episode after I did the interview, because I was really struck by how different elements of Ron and Greg's experiences were with breast cancer to some of the women that I have interviewed or met over the past few years. And I would really love to hear from you and let me know what your experience was. And I think the thing that really struck me was, and maybe this is a difference between the way men and women process things, or whether that is just me making sweeping generalizations, but when I've talked to women, I really get a sense of the emotional impact. You know, I've often talked about the fact that, you know, my life changed. I've been really impacted by my cancer diagnosis. And I really got the sense that, you know, it has impacted them. Don't get me wrong. I mean, it's a huge thing to go through. But I didn't really get the same sense of a major change from having cancer and it being, you know, something that really impacted emotionally. But I might be wrong, so I would love to hear from you guys. Come see me on Facebook, send me a message. I'm on Twitter, Instagram, or you can contact me at thecwordradio@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you again next week.
My day was going great and my soul was at ease until a group of brothers started bugging out, drinking the 40 ounce, disrespecting my black queen, holding their crosses and being obscene. At first I ignored them, cause see I know the type. They got drunk, they got guns, and yes they wanna fight. Then they see a young couple having a time that's good, and the Eagles wanna test a brother's manhood. So they came to test me cause of my heritage and the loud bright colors that I wear. I was a target cause I'm a fashion misfit, and the outfit that I'm wearing, brothers dissonant. While I stay calm and pray, leave me be. But this was the part of my date's anatomy. Why, Lord, do brothers have to drill me? Cause if I start to hit this man, they'll have to kill me. You see, cause I don't like killing Africans. But he wouldn't stop, and I ain't Ice Cube. But I had to take the brother out for being rude. And like I said before, I was mad about him. It took three or four cops to pull me off of him. But that's the story, y'all, story, of a black man. Get stomped by an African.
You see, up dwelling. I've been keeping my eye on the movement. I can't see no room for improvement. But when you all over there on your Jack Jones, you need to let me get behind your backbone. Cause I'm the man for the job, let me work here. I won't waste no time, I make it worth it. 100%, I make it worth it. You got a body to die for, let me work here. Now it's murder in the dance floor. I wanna take this further in the dance floor. I ain't forceful, but I'm still hardcore. You're gonna give me everything I ask for. It's not a long team, you're the boom team. Maybe more than a hotel room team. I'll never know if I just walk past. I really wanna dance, so I guess I'll just pass.
She's no pole. Look at those eyes, it's in her eyes. She's good to go. She can satisfy my mind, body, and
come and dance with me, come and dance with me, come and dance with me, come and dance with me. I see you glance at me, that's why I'm asking, B. So let's party, B. Come and dance with me.
If I'm out on my own, then I can look at you, looking at me. If I'm out on a date, then I just shut my eyes, then I can see. Get away from the bar, tell your boyfriend, hold your jaw, and dance with me.
I see you glance at me, that's why I'm asking, B. So let's party, B. Come and dance with me. Yo, it goes on and on. I see you get excited like this is my song. You think I wanna get involved, you are not wrong. Cause I've been waiting for this moment all night long. So I creep, creep, creep like to your see. I've got my left eye checking out the scenery. I've got my right eye right where it needs to be. No matter how I look at it, you look good to me. Still, I'm looking for the perfect view. The way I see it, that's right next to you. I know you probably heard it before, but still, I love it when you flex like that for real. So don't stop doing what you do when you do it. I just wanna be a part of it when you do it. Like a wally if I don't pursue it, and I can't go through it, so let's
she
get through it.
No hope. Look at those eyes, it's in her eyes, she's good to go. She can satisfy my mind, body, and
come and dance with me, come and dance with me, come and dance with me, come and dance with me. I see you glance with me, that's why I'm asking, B. So let's party, B. Come and dance with me.
If I'm out on my own, then I can look at you, looking at me. If I'm out on a date, then I just shut my eyes, then I can't see. Away from the bar, tell your boyfriend, hold your jaw, and start
you
blind
for me. That's why I'm asking, B. So let's party, B. Come and dance with me. I know you didn't come out to stand and stare. You bought new shoes and you did up your hair. You made a real effort tonight, and it shows. I can tell by your face you don't want to be alone, because the mood is right and the time is now. And if you can't do it, I'll show you how. All you gotta do is get loose, let go. Just throw a couple shakes, put your skills on show.
You and charming, even when Yeah.